IFPRI Policy Seminar, A New Path Forward, Agriculture and Food Security Strategy for South Sudan, held on Tuesday, October 23rd in Washington, D.C. Speaker, Shahidur Rashid from IFPRI.
All right, a very good afternoon to everyone. When I attended Madam Minister's presentation a few months ago, one thing she said stuck with me. And she said it with passion and conviction. She said, it was a time when there was a border conflict going on. And she said, let's keep our oil under the ground and develop the agriculture for our next generation. She didn't have that same level of intensity and compassion today because of the jet lag. But I'm sure you'll agree with me that her presentation was very substantive and clear. So I don't have much to add, but I'll highlight 3 points. Number one, to provide some numbers behind this potential and to talk briefly about some of the challenges that we know based on some of the research our colleagues have done here. And then finally make a point why agriculture in South Sudan is so important, why we all have to worry about it. Think about it, not worry about it. All right, here we go. Madam Minister pointed out 95% of the land is arable, it can be potentially cultivated. But if you look deeper into it, here is a map, 77% of the land is covered by trees and shrubs. And what you have is a 2.5 million hectares of land to cultivate effectively. All right, there you go. So you can change that scenario very easily. We can bring more cropland. If we convert only 6% of this land covered by grass and shrubs, you'll have 6.3 to 6.5 million hectares of land. So you're talking about exploiting a fraction of the potential. That is huge. And that area expansion potential will not be uniform. You see the dispersion across the map. You'll see that increase in cropland in the western Bahr al-Ghazal lakes and equatorial regions. All right, so these are the potential. Let's just stop there. Let's not do anything else. Leave the entire country under grass and shrubs for the ecological reason. Then think about this question. This is about the food shortage and vulnerability in the country. I know Madam Minister doesn't agree with that because these data are generated by WFP. So during 2004 to 2011, average consumption requirement is not effective consumption. Consumption requirement means whatever calorie a person needs multiplied by the population. If you calculate that way, country needs 1.8 million tons in a given year. Now, calculate the cereal imports as percentage of that requirement. Look at those bars, can go up to 60% met by that. Now ask ourselves the question. We have 2.5 million hectares of land already available there. If you can ensure, conservatively, 2 tons per hectare of land, from a million hectare, you grow 2 million tons of grain, which solves the problem of food shortages right away. But why can't we do that? There are some of the challenges. Data, as Minister pointed out, are not that good. But some of the works we are doing, if you look at that, I have two maps, two graphs there. On the top is the maize price. That's Greenbelt, Central Equatoria, where maize is grown. We look at the farm gate price, and we look at the share as percentage of the Juba price. Juba is the main consumption market. Look at that volatility. Look at the pattern of it. If they were equal, it would have been that horizontal line. And as a growing region, their price should be lower, naturally. But that's not the case. Look at 2009 and look at that figure. It was almost 60% above Juba price. So the market fundamentals, when are missing, this is the kind of behavior we'll see in the market, in the cereal market. Not only that, at the bottom, look for the sorghum and other important cereals. You see a totally different kind of trend. And when you do the market analysis for the cereals, these are close substitute. We should be expecting similar kind of pattern. We don't see that. Here is another number. If you value per hectare production in South Sudan and compare that with the neighbors, here is the picture you see. In Kenya, that is about $1,400. In South Sudan, it's $300. And in between, you have Uganda, $660, and in Ethiopia, $920. And we try to understand it. In this group, answer probably is obvious. You're thinking, well, it's because low productivity. Why low productivity? Well, people cannot use the input. Why can't you use the input? Input is too expensive to bring it there because of the high transactions cost. Same goes for the output. I cannot ship the output to the market where prices are high because my transactions cost are so high. So that's the kind of a dilemma all farmers are facing. Unless we change this equation, this reality in the landscape, we are not going to be competitive. All right, now looking forward then, what do we see based on Her Excellency's presentation? So we know there is no shortage of agroecological potential in the country. That is given. We are endowed with that. The challenge is translating that potential into economically viable agriculture. Now, this is particularly important for us, for South Sudan, for two reasons. I think most of us know this, there is the book by Paul Collier, he talks about this natural resources curse or trap, and then talks about this ethnic conflict trap. These are all impediments to development. There are potential. These are the risks that David has pointed out. Can that be a resource trap? Because when you have that resources, conflict go up, and there are evidence from many African countries. And then we have this famous theory of Dutch disease, which happened in the Netherlands in the 50s. So this makes it particularly relevant for South Sudan. We don't want to see South Sudan facing it 10 years from now. We don't want to talk about it 5 years from now, and then have to think, what do we do to avoid it? I'm glad that Minister pointed out they have taken deliberate policies to stabilize their currencies. That is important, because when you have a natural resources, oil revenue start flowing up, that will make your agriculture less competitive. And we have the example, we can have example from Nigeria. Look at that, they neglected their agriculture. Now we are talking about agriculture. IPRI has an office there supporting agricultural strategies. Nigeria has extracted more oil than the UAE during the same period of time. But we are still talking about challenges in agriculture. So this is some serious challenges ahead. Now, in terms of the fundamental policy direction, I think Her Excellency has pointed out all the key steps. I would like to highlight just one point, that there are many details to be worked out, and that's where the supports are needed. When we say, yes, we need infrastructure, there are many more questions. Infrastructure of what type? Infrastructure where? And how do we support them? Where the money will come from? All sort of questions will be there. And in the execution of that, the support is needed. But I'd like to end with a positive note. That note is this. South Sudan, yes, they have challenges, but challenges are not as big as the challenges that the US faced in the 1800s when they are pushing agriculture, or even India faced in the 1960s, or China faced in the 1950s and 60s. Because technology is there, we have the better technology, and the body of accumulated knowledge on moving agriculture forward. The CGIAR, since the formation in 30, 40 years, we have accumulated enough knowledge to give the boost. I'll stop there. Thank you very much.